Welcome to Talking Walking, hosted by Andrew Stuck from Rethinking Cities and the Museum of Walking. Talking Walking brings you interviews with people from the world of walking, artists, activists, professionals, and those of us who have a passion for just taking a walk. I'm in Bognor, in West Sussex, on a very hot day, walking around the University of Chichester campus with Andrea Vassallo. He's completing a PhD with an installation in which gallery visitors will be able to experience walking beside him on a long walk. For myself, long walks tend to be 12 to 15 kilometres. For Andrea, he chose to walk from his home in Lancing to his childhood home on the outskirts of Venice during the summer of 2021. If you happen to be anywhere near Bognor in the first 2 weeks of September 2022, I definitely recommend that you visit the installation and experience Falling in Step with Andrea as he walks to Italy. Our conversation is about the walk Andrea undertook and why long-distance walking is so important to him. And, spoiler alert, we also cover details of the exhibition. The conversation begins with me asking Andrea about the distance he walked and the time it took him.
I set off from Lancing and we reached the outskirts of Venice. Total of 1,850 kilometres. We walked for 2 months and a half. We left at the beginning of June, which was the 7th of June, and we arrived there on the 24th of August.
And this was in 2021?
2021, yes.
So therefore you were walking at times when there were COVID restrictions?
Well, we had to delay the starting date because we didn't have the second dose of the vaccine, and then we needed the second dose in order to enter into France, and we had to delay for a week. That gave us enough time to reach from Lancing to Dover.
You say we. Who were you walking with?
I was walking with my partner, Carlos, which very kindly agreed to take on board this adventure. We bought long-distance walker, and then we've been doing long-distance walking before together.
Okay, well, tell us a little bit about that. So how long have you been, walking from England to Italy is a hell of a long way. Were you walking similar distances elsewhere?
Both Carl and I met along the Camino Santiago, and then from there we start walking together. I did 2 Caminos in Spain. I did several long routes in Italy. One is Via degli Dei in Italy, connecting Bologna to Florence. And yes, we walk together because we can tolerate each other very easily. We know very well when we need time, because spending 24 hours a day with one person is intense. Walking with Carlos is very, very helpful and easy.
You're carrying camping equipment. Did you camp each night, or was it? Did you find people who were willing to put you up, or had you booked ahead and you're only staying in 5-star luxury?
Ooh, no, we didn't book anything ahead. Didn't really plan, exception for some route to take. We were following trails here in England, which would take us to Canterbury first, and there we join a well-known pilgrimage route. It's called Via Francigena, connecting Canterbury to Rome. And then the last part, which was from Piacenza in Italy all the way to Venice, was a mystery. Then we decided at the last moment. We camped. We've been doing wild camping. We put the tent inside campsite. We camped a lot of the nights there, but we met a lot of people as well that were giving us hospitality. And then because of COVID, hospitality actually was much more interesting, let's say. We met a lot of people. Then when we arrived into France, there was still a curfew on. Then people were very tired or being isolated, and when we arrived they were so happy to be able to meet somebody new, and to a certain extent we start to behave like I don't know, old-fashioned storyteller. We were saying the issue that were happening in other parts of the world, which was very, very interesting.
You were bringing the news.
Yes, we were bringing the news.
So what are the things you remember from the walk? What are the sort of standout moments, bad and good? You did mention to me also, before we started recording, you said that it was, in places, it was very wet.
In France, when north of France, actually, when the big rainfall hit, and then, yeah, we got so much water. we honestly, there was a night we were in the tent, in which, honestly, we thought the tent was going to go away. There was water coming underneath, and it was so scary. Yes, it was very wet. We had trouble because we were walking with a walking trolley. We had trouble taking some routes. Then we had to take main roads, which it wasn't ideal, particularly with big trucks passing by. Yes, it was an amazing experience.
So you walked with a trolley. Someone wears a hip belt and you're pulling it behind you, that's right?
Yes. Well, what happened is then Carlos, I think 8 years ago, had a car accident and a big injury on his L2 vertebrae. And then he cannot carry a rucksack for a long time. Then what happened, the only option was to have a trolley with us, which that trolley was a life-saving to a certain extent because we had all the sleeping gear in there. But sometimes when Carlos was getting tired or I was getting tired, we packed everything on the trolley and just one of us was taking it. And then we could have a rest, at least for our shoulder, let's say, and for my shoulder.
How much stuff was there?
Well, because this is part of my PhD project, not only we had all the gears, then like 10 sleeping bags and all the necessity that we need. Obviously, we were with the bare minimum. We had 2 pair of clothing each, and that's it. Because this is part of my project, I had a drone, I had a laptop, I had 3 different cameras, microphones, and all of those kind of devices that were supposed to be very useful for my recording of the adventure that we had.
Okay, let's wind back a little bit then. You're doing a PhD. What brought you to doing a PhD? And then tell us a little bit what the PhD is investigating.
I think I started doing my PhD because it was a sort of a promise. I made to my parents. I lost my dad in 2007, and then I always told him that I was going to go to university. And then I started my BA, and then I decided to do an MA, and consequently a PhD came after, and I already started thinking what will happen after that. PhD was a way to combine my art practice with something else that I love, which is long-distance walking. And then I decided to do this research.
Tell us a little bit more about what your art practice is.
By training, I am a painter and printmaker. I ditched that practice because I need something else. I hope painters will not hate me, but I always find boring the idea that when you go into a gallery, there is just an object there to look at. And then I start to develop a strong interest in the interactive aspect. And then I start to build installation. And then the installation allow me to bring my own personal experience to other people. From there, see what they experience.
You're creating an installation as part of your PhD. What will people encounter? Especially as people will listen to this after the exhibition is over. What will they have missed?
While I was writing the question for my PhD, one of the main issues that I come through was Amish Fulton's idea that you cannot repropose within a gallery environment the experience of a walk. Obviously, he's right, in my opinion. But I kind of trying to challenge a little bit this statement that he made. by allowing people to have a hint of what it means to be on a long distance walk. Now, this is the introduction of what I'm doing. And then what I'm doing is I've been recording my journey with a 360 degree camera, which the way it's set up, the camera allowed to, it feels like it's suspended in the air and it's following me.
So this is very clever. This isn't the drone. This is something different.
Something very different, yeah. What happened is then that the camera stitched together the two lenses that is recording, and then make the, first of all, the stick disappear.
So you're carrying a stick. So it's like having a walking stick.
Yes.
Trekking pole, but it's pointing into the air.
Well, it's pointing on my side, really. What I envision is to have the projection of those footages that have been taken with me always on the left side, the pathway in the center of the screen, and then the landscape on the right side. This will give the opportunity to people coming into the installation to accompany me all the way to Italy. Well, at least for 76 minutes. That is the plan.
I was going to say, not surely. You didn't film 1,850 kilometers.
No, I didn't. Luckily for me, I didn't. What happened is then during the walk, I was trying to capture what was more fascinating for me. And then what I enjoyed most was the massive landscape that was over there. For instance, I make the conscious decision of not recording any cities, which now I regret a little bit, because it would have been nice to have some footages of me walking in the city as well. At the moment, you will see just bare landscape in, well, not bare, but in the middle of nowhere, let's say.
Well, beautiful countryside.
Countryside, yes. That's thank you. That was the word. I think what I love about walking is that one, because I tend to walk on the countryside, and the city, I'm so used, accustomed to big city in general, even small city. And then I wanted to discard that part, even to make a little bit, I don't know if I can say rise awareness about how beautiful is this world, but to a certain extent as well, the city are not center point. The world is the center point. And for me, is this idea of being in the world, which is important.
Was there any equipment that you took with you that you practically never used and then rather regret carrying? And was there anything that you wish you had taken and you hadn't, and therefore had to compromise?
Yes, I used the drone once. And then luckily it's 250 gram drone, which it wasn't very heavy. The battery were more heavy than the drone itself. I think I would have brought just the main camera. Then the main camera I was using, the 360 degree camera, because I didn't use the other two at all. I did, I think, one time lapse with one of the cameras, but nothing more. I have to say as well, then recording was becoming a distraction. I wanted to enjoy the long distance walking. I know it's part of my PhD and then I have to compromise, but I really wanted to be there. That was very important for me to experience in order to translate this experience within a gallery environment. Now, if I was stopping every 5 minutes starting to record something, then the experience was actually not as good and probably would have taken me a little bit longer to get to Italy.
And of course, the other side to it is, you know, you've got to, as you say, carry batteries and recharge this equipment. And
charging the batteries, funny enough, I will say that in England it was actually the sunniest spell of most of the journey, England and Italy. And then we had a solar panel with us, which was attached on top of the trolley. It saved our lives so many times, you have no idea. That was a great thing, so I'm so glad I bought it, and then we brought it with us.
I did ask you to sort of what were the standout moments, and then we got sidetracked. So I was going to ask you, how often were you sidetracked from the route you were taking? Did you have to make any diversions? Or did you find that you wanted to make diversions and couldn't, or were restrained because of the time that you had to do it in?
The major diversion of what we were planning was the Italian stretch from Piacenza all the way to Venice, because was an area in which I never walked before, and then I didn't know particular routes to follow. There is a quite well-known pilgrimage route that connect Venice, well, or Trieste actually, all the way to Santiago, which it was 200 kilometers, a little bit too long. And then while we were in Piacenza, somebody told us that there was a cycle route connecting, following the Po River, the biggest Italian river. And then we decided to follow that one, and with the trolley it was life-saving, because it wasn't all tarmac, but at least it was fairly flat, and then we could walk easily over there. And then we had a beautiful river on our side all the time. That, I think, is the major diversion. But as I said earlier, we didn't really plan the routes, then we were very free to take whichever area was taking us to where we wanted to go. We knew more or less how many kilometers we wanted to do by per day.
What was that you were trying to aim for?
Well, the idea was to walk 25k every day. Obviously, is an idea. There were days in which we walk nearly 50k. There were days in which we walk 9k. You know, we were very relaxed. We were just thinking of time. And, for instance, the only place we booked was on top of the pass of the Grand San Bernard, because we met somebody else along the way, and then Massimo started to tell me, you know, there is always very busy, it's best that we book. And then actually that pushed us to walk quicker, because otherwise we were missing the booking. And then we arrived there, it wasn't that packed. but that was the only real place where we booked. If we booked something else, we were booking in the morning for the evening, and that's it. No, just to be sure that we were able to find a place to have a shower. That was the most important part, to have a shower, really.
Now, of course, you had the ability to track where you were going. Did you do that as well? Did you have sort of GPS running all the time?
Yes, we tracked all the journey.
You must have done quite a lot of up and down, especially the Grand San Bernard Pass is quite high, but other places too, I'm sure.
Actually, I was quite surprised, because the Camino Santiago, you do up and downs much more often. Obviously, on this walk, we climb, I think, 2,400 meters above sea level, which was very high. But overall, there were not so many, difference in level.
And yeah, did you find stretches where you got utterly bored? I mean, that's shocking to say, but
I don't think we found a boring stretch. We found worrying stretch. We had one day to walk 37 kilometer straight line, honestly, straight line, along this major road. And then there were trucks coming. Oh, my God, that was a nightmare. But even there was fascinating, because you start to focus on the smallest, perhaps stupid things that you don't normally look. You know, we were never bored. We were upset. We were at time tired, obviously.
No major injuries, no shin splints?
Mainly
because you're pretty fit people yourselves, I mean, because you keep fit. Mm. And you've been doing long distance walking for a while.
Yeah, we did doing it for a while. In between, we don't walk. We walk, I don't know, to go to the seafront or to come here to work, but we don't do long distance walking. We are those kind of people, everything or nothing, which is quite interesting. We did exercise before going for this walk, a couple of months before, and then every time I had a day off, we were off walking. The only injury, which it wasn't an injury, we didn't get an injury, exception for, I think, one or two blisters, is coming down the pass of the Grand San Bernard, which pushed us a little bit too hard, and then we got sick. It wasn't COVID, thank God. and then we had to stop for 3 days.
One question I should ask you is, it's a hot day today. You know, we should be drinking lots of water. Were you having to carry lots of water?
Yes, we were carrying a lot of water. We were filling water from fountain or asking people, can you please fill up this bottle of water? We were carrying 3 liters myself in the back. Carlos had another sack with 2 liters of water plus 3 bottles of 1 liter of water. We were having a lot of water. Even because we had to consider then if we were camping, we couldn't have had a shower most of the time, particularly in the French stretch. And then we were using wet wipes, but we were using our drinking water as well to have a sort of a shower.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier that because of COVID and people being quite often quite isolated because of COVID, that when you encounter them, or they encountered you, I don't know which way you describe it, when you came into their local neighbourhoods, they were very welcoming. Can you tell us perhaps a bit more about the people you met?
Yes, the people were fairly amazing. And then with my broken French, I had a conversation with people, say, where we can pitch the tent or something. But the most unbelievable situation was when we saw a lady in this very small town, and we asked her, do you know if there is a salle de fête here? Normally in France, they have every council have a salle de fête where you could potentially sleep in. And then to make the story short, what happened is they contacted somebody else, which was Jason and Nancy. It's an English and American couple. They live there. They've been living there for a long time. And they really open up their house to us, preparing dinner in the evening. I say, well, tomorrow you won't find anything where you can go and stay. I have an idea. Why are you not walking without your bags, without anything, walk as long as you want, and come and pick you up. You come back here, you sleep with us once again, and the day after I will take you to the exact point in which we left. You know, you cannot ask anything more from people. That people, they were all along like that. I don't know if it was the magic, the power of the trolley, or our charming behavior, but people were like that all the time. It was unbelievable.
But you were walking what is a pilgrimage route, so that people would have known that there might have been pilgrims on that route, and you think that they're, you know, open to it because of familiarity, or do you think it was more the fact that you were exceptions, you were people who were... I mean, did anyone challenge you and say, why are you bringing COVID to with us?
No.
You haven't got COVID in that trolley. There wasn't any issue about...
No issue whatsoever, actually. COVID never been mentioned whatsoever, in the sense that nobody was worried about us. What was interesting then, yes, there was a stretch in which was the pilgrimage route, particularly where Jason and Nancy were, but the most friendly people, in the sense that they would give us things, not just material things, but support, everything, were on the Italian stretch, in which we were not following a pilgrimage route. And that is not normal. I spoke with many people, say, do you invite normally people in? And they say no. But there was something about us, about the story, about us, because the trolley was waiting for questions, and then they see the trolley, what you guys doing, we're walking from England to Italy, okay, you welcome here. That I think was very, very powerful.
Yeah, so you didn't feel threatened by anyone trying to mug you or rob you or anything?
Well, I don't think they want to mug somebody doing a long distance walk because, well, they can get the dirty clothing. Well, really, yeah, saying, I mean, that, don't get me wrong.
You had some fancy equipment.
Actually, saying that, the equipment in general, not only computer, but even the walking equipment, is very expensive. But no, we didn't have any issue whatsoever. That was really amazing. And that is, you know, now looking back, is always the kind of things you remember all the good things. We had several negative adventure, but it was more related to us than to other people. The people were fantastic with us.
Been editing video. Are you now forgetting the bits that you didn't film?
It does work like that, but I think what I cannot edit out is the feeling in my head, and those that will remain there forever. And then I think, you know, is the repetitiveness of the walking journey. What it means, then, if I walk 40 kilometers, obviously I cannot pay attention to every single step I'm taking in the sense of the landscape. The landscape changes so slowly, not like in the car, then you are in the middle of the grassland and all of a sudden you have big trees or whatever, and you're going very fast. Walking is a small change, incremental change, which you don't realize is happening. You just, oh boy, that's all changed. And now the hill is not there anymore. It's very close to me. And then you edit out things while you're walking, obviously. But what is there is the sensation, the feeling, and the experience I had.
I usually ask people to recommend a couple of walks. But maybe you could just recommend a leg of the walk that you undertook.
Funny enough, I'm Italian again, and Carlos is Spanish. But I will say that one of the most stunning stretch was this English stretch. South down, north down, were unbelievable, amazing. There, don't get me wrong, the Alps was something. It was, I don't know, I'm speechless. I wouldn't even know how to describe them. But while we were going down the Alps, we were just looking forward not to see those mountains anymore. And I think the English stretch was hills, flat areas, at times difficult, but, you know, there was always some beauty outside, behind the corner. And while the French stretch was very beautiful as well, but at times it could have been a little bit repetitive. I wouldn't say boring, but repetitive. And then as well, the Italian, well, everything. You had to walk from England to Italy, let's say. Another walk that wasn't related to this walk that we've been doing, then I really suggest people to be doing, is becoming even more and more popular, unfortunately, to a certain extent, is the Via degli Dei in Italy, connecting Bologna to Florence, which is quite hard, particularly if you have a 15 kilos bag, like I did, because I was testing for my long walk of England, Italy. But it's so unbelievable. You're just going up and down the Apennine, and it was just incredible, yeah.
You've been listening to Talking Walking, brought to you by Rethinking Cities and the Museum of Walking. In this episode, you've heard from Andrea Vassallo. If you have any views on this interview or any walking issues, we'd love to hear from you. Just follow the links on the Talking Walking website. We look forward to having you along for future episodes of Talking Walking. Recorded and produced by Andrew Stuck of Rethinking Cities Limited, our artwork is designed by Ian Martin of Aardvark Graphics, and the music is composed by Simon Sanders of EZ Tronic.